Welcome to hour two of today's reading of the Arizona Republic for Monday, August 17th. I'm volunteer reader Philip Varellan, reading remotely. We read from arizonacentral.com. We read the electronic edition of the Arizona Republic. And on Mondays, we start with Sunday's death notices. Carol Comito, 75, Washington, D.C. John Conrad Davis Jr., 85, Scottsdale, Arizona. Dr. Roddy Arnold Gardner, 86, Phoenix, Arizona. Richard or Rick J. Gladdy, 64, Scottsdale, Arizona. Rochelle Hall, 68, Scottsdale, Arizona. Dennis Harrison, 82, Phoenix, Arizona. Arthur Kearns, 88, Tempe, Arizona. Judith Lyman, 79, Chandler, Arizona. Ronald Patrick Martinez, 69. Susan Palmer, 90, Scottsdale, Arizona. Thomas Palmer, 95, Scottsdale, Arizona. Janice Vanderland, 86, Tempe, Arizona. George Varga III, 80, Gilbert, Arizona. Richard Ward, 85, Mesa, Arizona. Janice Wood, 79, Scottsdale, Arizona. Those are the death notices from Sunday, August 16th. Next up, we go to today's business pages with Harvey McKay's weekly feature. His article today is titled, Make Character Your Best Characteristic. There is an ancient Hawaiian belief that each child born has a bowl of perfect light. If the child tends to his or her light, it will grow in strength and they can do all things. Swim with the sharks, fly with the birds, know and understand all things. If, however, they become envious, jealous, angry, or fearful, they drop a stone into their bowl of light and some of the light goes out. Light and the stone cannot hold the same space. If a child continues to put stones in the bowl, the light will go out and the child will become a stone. A stone does not grow, nor does it move. If at any time the child tires of being a stone, all he or she needs to do is turn the bowl upside down and the stones will fall away and the light will grow once more. Character development is absolutely crucial, not only in life, but also in business. In the business world, your character is like a compass that guides your decisions and actions. Here's why character is so important. First of all, trust and credibility. People are more likely to trust and do business with someone who has a strong character. Trust is the foundation of any successful relationship, whether it's with customers, employees, or partners. Once you establish your character, it follows you everywhere. A good reputation can open doors, while a bad one closes them. Next, we have long-term success. Businesses built on strong ethical foundations tend to have more sustainable growth. They attract loyal customers and dedicated employees who share similar values. Character helps you navigate through tough times. It's easier to bounce back from setbacks when you have a solid moral foundation. Next, we have decision making. A well-developed character provides a set of guiding principles that help in making tough decisions. It ensures that your choices align with your values and ethics. It helps maintain consistency in actions and decisions, which is crucial for building a reliable and trustworthy brand. Next, personal satisfaction. Acting in accordance with your values brings personal satisfaction and peace of mind. It's easier to sleep at night knowing you've done the right thing. Maintaining your character boosts self-respect and self-esteem, which are important for personal and professional growth. Influence and leadership is next. Leaders with strong character inspire others to follow suit. They set a positive example and create a culture of integrity within the organization. When you act with integrity, you empower others to do the same, creating a ripple effect that benefits the entire organization. Indira Gandhi, an Indian stateswoman who was the granddaughter of Mahatma Gandhi, said her grandfather once told her there are two kinds of people, those who do the work and those who take the credit. She said, "He told me to try and be in the first group. There was less competition there." Singer-songwriter Stevie Wonder said, "Ability may get you to the top, but it takes character to keep you there." In my early years in business, I had the opportunity to observe two salespeople who were both exceptionally talented. Let's call them John and Mike. Both were equally skilled in their craft, but their approach to business and character were starkly different. John was known for his integrity and honesty. He never made promises he couldn't keep and always put the customer's needs first, even if it meant losing a sale. John would advise a customer against a purchase if he believed it wasn't in their best interest. Over time, John built a loyal customer base. People trusted him, and word-of-mouth referrals became his primary source of new business. His clients knew they could rely on him, and that trust translated into long-term success. Mike, on the other hand, was more focused on short-term gains. He often exaggerated the benefits of his products and made promises he couldn't deliver on. While this approach initially brought him quick sales and impressive numbers, but it wasn't sustainable. Customers soon realized that Mike's promises were empty and his reputation began to suffer. Complaints started to pile up and his customer base dwindled as people lost trust in him. Years down the line, John was thriving. His business had grown steadily and he had a network of loyal clients who valued his integrity. Mike, however, struggled to maintain his business. Try as he might, restoring his reputation and character was not as easy as turning over his bowl of stones before he hit rock bottom. All right, here's McKay's moral. Reputation is precious. Character is priceless. All right, that's Harvey McKay's article titled, "Make Character Your Best Characteristic." Next up from Ken Colburn, his article is titled, "How to Use AI to Identify Scam Text Messages." And here's the question. Do AI detection apps really work on scam messages? Here's the answer. Most dedicated scam detector apps flooding the App Store are disappointing. They can try to lock you into pricey monthly subscriptions, collect your personal data, or simply hand you a vague, safe or unsafe score without explaining why. They also add to the endless pile of apps requiring security and feature updates. Instead of downloading another single-use app, you're much better off using a free, general-purpose AI chatbot like ChatGPT, Claude, or Gemini. Because these tools work seamlessly across your smartphone, tablet, and computer. They're always within reach whenever a suspicious message pops up. The surge in AI-generated scams via text and email has made fraud far more convincing. Scammers now use AI to write polished, personalized messages, eliminating the bad grammar and awkward phrasing that used to be dead giveaways. According to the FTC, Americans reported losing nearly $16 billion to fraud in 2025. But you can use those same AI tools to fight back. All right, ask for a lesson. The real secret lies in how you ask. Most scams succeed by inducing panic, like a frantic text claiming your bank account is frozen, or that an expensive item was just purchased on your account. Instead of reacting in the heat of the moment or asking the AI, "Is this a scam?" try prompting it like this. Analyze this message for signs of a scam. Explain what the sender wants me to do. What could happen if I do it? And identify the specific red flags. Instead of a generic verdict, the chatbot breaks down the mechanics. The sender is creating artificial urgency using a fake tracking link to steal your login credentials. The AI doesn't need to click the link. It simply spots red flags in the visible web address, like misspelled brand names, unusual domain endings, or anonymous link shorteners that legitimate businesses rarely use. Seeing those hidden tactics exposed instantly strips away the panic. Having AI explain the mechanics helps build your intuition. You aren't just evaluating one message, you're training yourself to spot the red flags in future scams. All right, protect your privacy first. Before submitting anything to a chatbot, take 5 seconds to clean the text after pasting it in. Delete your name, phone number, account number, and email address. If a message feels particularly sensitive, don't paste the entire thing. Just copy the suspicious paragraph or describe the situation in plain English. All right. Treat it as a coach. A chatbot can be a brilliant advisor, but keep 2 simple rules in mind. AI can be wrong. If a chatbot says looks legitimate, but the message asks for money, gift cards, or login details, never treat that as a green light. Verify the request independently. Next, never click the link. No matter what the chatbot says, never click a link in an unexpected text or email. If you think an alert might be real, open the official app directly or call the company using a phone number from your bill or card. If you aren't sure what to do next, keep the conversation going. How can I safely check if my account actually has a problem? For anyone who hasn't found a reason to try AI chatbot yet, scam detection is the ultimate entry point. It's free, accessible, and could save you a lot of money and heartache as digital fraud continues to evolve. All right, that was Ken Colburn's article titled "How to Use AI to Identify Scam Text Messages." Our next article is Ask Johnny. Leadership turnover can show companies' strengths. This is by Johnny C. Taylor, which is a special to the USA Today. Here is the question. We had a well-liked manager who took a position at another company last fall. We were sad to see the manager go, and unfortunately, in the time since, we have lost a number of additional employees who have essentially been poached by this other company. These are all employees who were equally well-liked, and I believe fit very well in our company culture and enjoyed their time here. What can we do to improve our employee retention? This is from Taylor. Here's the answer. Losing a respected manager is difficult. Losing talented employees soon afterward can be even more concerning. But before you conclude another company is poaching your people, ask yourself a question. Why are they choosing to leave? Not every departure represents a failure. Sometimes another opportunity is simply a better fit for an employee's goals, career aspirations, or stage of life. Healthy turnover is inevitable. Repeated turnover, for the same reasons, deserves your attention. Leadership transitions are one of the clearest tests of an organization's strength. They reveal whether you've invested in developing leaders at every level and are prepared for inevitable change. Strong managers earn trust, so it's not surprising when employees choose to follow a leader they respect. But no organization should depend on one exceptional leader to sustain engagement or retention. Instead of reacting emotionally, get curious. Exit interviews tells you why people left. Stay interviews helps you understand why your best employees remain and what might cause them to leave. Both are valuable. Look for patterns instead of isolated stories. Are employees leaving because they don't see opportunities to grow? Do they feel supported by their managers? Are compensation, flexibility, or career development emerging as themes? Retention isn't built when employees receive another offer. It's built every day long before they do. Employees are more likely to stay when they trust their leaders, receive regular feedback, feel recognized for their contributions, and see opportunities to grow. That kind of commitment is built through everyday conversations, meaningful coaching, and consistent investment in people's development, not during an exit interview or a last-minute counteroffer. You can't prevent every talented employee from accepting another opportunity, nor should you try to. What you can do is create an environment where talented people choose to stay because they believe they're growing, they're valued, and they have a future. Measure your organization's success by the compelling reasons employees have to stay, not by whether one exceptional leader keeps them engaged. Organizations that consistently invest in their people, develop leaders at every level, and prepare for change don't just retain more talent. They build stronger cultures, stronger leadership pipelines, and stronger businesses. All right, that article by Johnny C. Taylor was titled Leadership Turnover Can Show Companies Strength. And Johnny C. Taylor is president and CEO of SHRM, the world's largest trade association of human resource professionals. And he's the author of Reset, A Leader's Guide to Work in an Age of Upheaval. The views and opinions expressed are the author's and do not necessarily reflect those of USA Today. Next up from today's sports pages, from the front page, an article titled, Suns Greats Deliver Strong Speeches. This is from the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, and this is put together by Dwayne Rankin from the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. Former Suns great Amari Stoudemire and Mike D'Antoni delivered their Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame induction speeches Saturday, August 15th in Springfield, Massachusetts. Here's what Stoudemire and D'Antoni said about their time in Phoenix as both received standing ovations at the conclusion of their speeches at Symphony Hall. Center Stoudemire, Phoenix Suns molded me as a basketball player. Playing for Phoenix as a rookie was important for me. As a high school player growing up in Florida, you know, you're going to the NBA and it's a different world. And to have an organization that understood that and really brought me in and really molded me as a basketball player helped me to become who I am today. A McDonald's All-American who endured an unstable upbringing, Stoudemire had verbally committed to play at Memphis under then head coach John Calipari, but he elected to enter the 2002 NBA draft. I had a pre-draft workout with a couple of teams, worked out in Phoenix. I had a brilliant workout. I felt great about that, and I was drafted 9th to the Phoenix Suns as a high schooler. At that time, Jerry Colangelo was the owner. Brian Colangelo was the GM. Rick Welts was there, so I was ready to try to take on this journey of the NBA as a high schooler, a true high schooler. Jerry Colangelo, 04, Grant Hill, 18, Tracy McGrady, 17, Steve Nash, 18, and D'Antoni, 26, and Welts, 18, were Stoudemire's Hall of Fame presenters. And mind you, I played 2 years of high school basketball. I played my freshman year and my senior year. So in the midst of all this turmoil, I always stay focused and I stay locked in, and I persevered through all of it. The 9th overall pick in the 2002 draft, Stoudemire, 43, was voted NBA Rookie of the Year for the 2002-2003 season. When I got to the NBA, I started learning the game. When you're a high school player, you're 6'10", you're athletic. The coach is like, yeah, go out there and play, you got it. And you just go out there and do what you know how to do. But when I got to the NBA, I started learning the game. Stoudemire credited his veteran teammates, specifically Penny Hardaway, Tom Gugliotta, and Stephon Marbury, for guidance and support during his rookie season. These guys that were there my first year, I would ask these guys questions, and I'm the type of player that I'm going to ask executive questions also. I'm speaking to Eddie Johnson, who was a color commentator. I'm talking to the team security, Kevin Tucker. I'm hanging out with Scott Williams. These older veteran guys that would teach me how to be a professional and how to really live and form myself into a basketball player, but also into a professional. Stoudemire averaged 21.4 points, 8.9 rebounds in his 8 seasons with the Suns. All right, here's next up is Suns coach D'Antoni. Together, we influenced the game. In Phoenix, we had incredible talent. Sean Marion, Quentin Richardson, Boris Diaw, Rajah Bell, Joe Johnson, Grant Hill, and this guy, Amari Stoudemire. Amari, you posterized so many people. That's crazy. Then we signed this long-haired Canadian soccer player, Steve Nash. Steve, I am proud that your 2 MVP titles were won with the Suns. All of you guys are the reason why coaching is so rewarding. Jerry Colangelo, Bob McAdoo, Rod Thorne, Nash, and Stoudemire were D'Antoni's Hall of Fame presenters. D'Antoni, 75, entered the Hall of Fame as a contributor, not a coach. Special thanks to my son's coaches, Elvin Gentry, Phil Weber, Dan D'Antoni, Mark Ivoroni, and to Brian Colangelo and Julie Fee, Rick Welts, for being instrumental in building the success. You know it wasn't easy, but our players and coaches had the courage to embrace a different way of playing, and together we influenced the game. D'Antoni coached the Suns to a 62-win season in 2004-2005, 61 victories in 2006-2007, and 2 trips to the Western Conference Finals. He won NBA Coach of the Year twice, 2004-05 in Phoenix, and 2016-2017 with the Houston Rockets. Playing a style built on speed, threes, and small ball, he developed playing and coaching overseas. D'Antoni posted a 253-136 one-loss record in 5 seasons in Phoenix with his 7 seconds or less system. Phoenix also gave me a lifelong friendship with this man, Jerry Colangelo. Jerry, for more than 20 years, you've been an advisor, friend. Thank you for your guidance and generosity and your remarkable ability to get us into Bianco's Pizzeria. I appreciate it. A former Suns team owner, Jerry Colangelo, developed a friendship with Chris Bianco, owner of Pizzeria Bianco in downtown Phoenix. Also, I want to thank Jerry and Mike Krzyzewski for giving me the opportunity to coach with Team USA. You know, winning Olympic gold medals in 2008 and 2012 alongside some of the greatest players in the world and the coaches in the world was an epic experience. D'Antoni closed the Phoenix segment of his speak, thanking Suns team owner Matt Ishbia and the franchise. We have a very large contingent here from the Phoenix Suns. Thank you to Matt Ishbia and the Suns organization for your support. You have a special organization and a great city. All right, that article from today's front pages was titled Suns Greats Deliver Strong Speeches, and that was by Dwayne Rankin from the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. Another article from the front page is titled Boulder to Tempe Football Pipeline. This is about ASU football, and this is put together by Logan Stanley. Hines Ward knows there's no replacing Jordan Tyson. Tyson is a one of one. After coming over from Colorado following a serious injury as a freshman, Tyson blossomed into a first-round NFL draft pick under the guidance of Ward as a wide receivers coach at Arizona State. You know, there'll never be another JT, Ward told the Arizona Republic at its annual trip to Payson for Camp Tantazona. But there's no denying the connection that some will make it with another former Colorado player now in the ASU receivers room, Omarion Miller. In the offseason, Miller made the move from Boulder to Tempe via the transfer portal, following the same path as Tyson in 2023. While Ward said Tyson is a unique player, he sees similarities between the two. Both competitors. JT, he hates losing. He hates any DB covering him one time and talking trash to him. He wants to redo it right then and there. Similarities are the same. Always extremely competitive, wants to win every time. He wants to make sure he's in the right spot making plays. I try not to compare people. People have their own little style to them. Echoing what he said about Tyson, Ward ended his answer with, there will probably never be another Omarion. The connections between Miller and Tyson extend further. During his visit to Colorado, Miller was hosted by none other than Tyson. When Tyson made the move to ASU, Miller kept tabs on him while he was busy with his own preseason at Colorado. Miller couldn't help but notice how well Tyson was doing with the Sun Devils. I definitely watched him during our season, being that during that season he was one of the better receivers in that class, so I kept an eye on him, Miller told the Republic. Happy for him. He's in the league doing what he can. Wish I could have got a chance to play with him. Seeing what Ward and the coaching staff did with Tyson, turning him into an overall receiver, is what drew Miller to the school. Once he came here, the 3 years, the development that I've seen him change from was eye-catching to me, said Miller, who was held out of ASU's annual Camp Tantazona scrimmage Saturday, August 15th, likely because of workload management. Miller is coming off his best season yet at the college level with 45 receptions for 808 yards and 8 touchdowns in 2025. He was regarded as a four-star transfer prospect and was seen as one of the biggest additions of the offseason for ASU. Miller was named to the All-Big 12 preseason team for the upcoming season. At 6'2" and weighing 215 pounds, Miller's build is similar to Tyson, who's 6'2", 200. Miller has the speed to break away from defenders, but can also take a hit across the middle of the field with his frame. Very elusive, Ward said, for his size, to be able to move, to be able to run, to change direction, and then, of course, exceptional ball skills. Watching him when we played Colorado last year, it just stood out on tape. I'm extremely happy to work with somebody with his skill set. He's just an all-around football player. I'm giving him the blueprints. Hopefully he can go out there and help win some games for us. Miller has drawn the attention of Coach Kenny Dillingham, who recently said at Camp Tantazona, he's been great. He's pushed himself a lot this camp. At this time last year, Miller said he viewed himself mainly as an X receiver, the position that lines up on the outside. But Miller now feels like he is an all-around wide receiver who can play anywhere on the field. It's been part of Miller's growth, both on and off the field, after joining the Sun Devils. O's a special dude, offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo said. Obviously, we know all about the skill set, right? I think his best attributes, probably the person. That's the piece you don't know about when you go out and you're in the transfer portal. You try to do the best background you can, but until you fuse them into your culture, you really don't know what's going to take shape. And he is a beautiful human, awesome young man, loves to work on and off the field, carries the standards, carries our identity as an offense and a culture to the utmost. He does all the skill set stuff we know about. He hasn't been very long, and he's totally committed to being part of our culture and our team that fast. That's exactly what you hope to get. All right, that article from today's front pages was titled Boulder to Tempe Football Pipeline, and that was by Logan Stanley. All right, we're at the midway point of today's reading of the Arizona Republic for Monday, August 17th. I want to remind you, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. And remember, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info and audio/on demand. And also, you can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. All right, to get started in our last half hour, we go to an article titled Seabirds Flock to Panama, Displaced by El Nino, Some Species Flying Farther. And this is put together from Ania Lebrun and Stephanie Eschenbacher. Panama Bay, Panama. Flocks of seabirds native to the cold, nutrient-rich waters off Peru and Chile are appearing far outside their usual range in Panama Bay as powerful El Nino warms the eastern Pacific and disrupts marine food supplies. The birds are arriving in unusually high numbers after warming waters drove fish such as anchovies and sardines farther from their traditional feeding grounds, forcing seabirds to travel in search of food. Researchers say their presence underscores the vulnerability of marine ecosystems to shift in ocean temperatures and food availability, and how rapidly wildlife can be forced to adapt. El Nino, a periodic warming of ocean surface temperatures in the Pacific, alters global weather patterns and typically contributes to higher temperatures. The United Nations Weather Agency warned that a strong El Nino was expected to intensify starting in August. While the sight of South American seabirds circling above Panama City's skyline is a rare spectacle for birdwatchers, researchers take it as an early sign of how ocean warming can ripple through the food chain. The birds were already telling us that we were going to have a very strong El Nino, said Rosabel Miro, director of the Audubon Society of Panama, adding that birdwatchers began noticing the unusual visitors in June, just as forecasts pointed to a strong El Nino developing across the Pacific. Sightings of blue-footed boobies in the Gulf of Panama off the southern coast of Panama are not unusual, but the numbers being recorded close to Panama City are. Data from the citizen science platform eBird showed between 60 and 400 blue-footed boobies have been observed around the Peñon de San Jose in nearby areas since June, Miro said, compared with between 21 and 200 during the 2014-2016 El Nino and 3 to 62 during the 2023-24 El Nino. These are not migratory birds, Miro said. They are birds that, because of a lack of food, are forced to migrate. The toll, she said, can extend well beyond displacement. Past El Nino events have disrupted breeding cycles and reduced reproductive success as birds struggle to find enough to eat. The disruption, El Nino reshapes the marine ecosystem. The disruption begins well below the surface, scientists say, at the base of the marine food chain itself. Steve Patton, who oversees a network of weather stations and ocean monitoring sensors for the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute, said Panama is already experiencing extraordinary climatic conditions associated with the developing El Nino. Since May, every month has been either the hottest or the second hottest that we have seen for that month, Patton said, adding that he expects this trend to continue through the end of the year. We have 50 years of temperature data and 100 years of rainfall data. This is not something random. This is something significant. Rainfall in parts of the Panama Canal watershed is running far below average, he said, while forecasts point to hotter and drier conditions through the end of the year and possibly into the middle of next year. Patton said strong El Nino events deepen the thermocline, the boundary separating warm surface water from colder, nutrient-rich water below. As that colder water becomes harder to reach, marine productivity declines. Scientists are still studying how a warm climate may affect El Nino itself. Patton said there is no scientific consensus yet on whether climate change is altering the El Nino-La Nina cycle, though he noted that several of the strongest events on record have occurred in recent decades. If ocean conditions return to normal, the rare seabirds now gathering along Panama's Pacific coast may disappear as suddenly as they arrive. All right, that article was titled Seabirds Flock to Panama. Next up, we have an article by Leah Douglas titled Advocate Fasts to Protest Snap Cuts. This is for out of Washington. Advocate Liz Wills O'Gilvy, 63, said she has not eaten for 15 days in a bid to push Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey to raise funding for the state's shrinking food stamp program. By consuming only water, electrolytes, and glucose pills, Wills O'Gilvy, whom Healey last year appointed to an anti-hunger task force, aims to draw attention to rising food insecurity due to cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. I know what hunger looks and feels like, said Wills O'Gilvy, who directs the Springfield Food Policy Council and the food justice organization Gardening the Community. More than 5.3 million people across the United States have lost SNAP benefits since President Donald Trump made sweeping changes to the program in his 2025 tax and spending law, according to U.S. Department of Agricultural data. Rising food insecurity, coupled with higher grocery bills, has strained low-income households ahead of the November 3rd midterm elections. States have raced to implement the changes, and some have tightened the SNAP application process to avoid new federal penalties associated with incorrect benefit calculations. Massachusetts Department of Transitional Assistance, which administers SNAP, said enrollment is down by nearly 182,000 people, including nearly 65,000 children. DTA staff are overwhelmed and people are losing benefits because they cannot reach caseworkers, said Wills O'Gilvy, who Healey appointed to a state anti-hunger task force created last July after Trump's law passed. Wills O'Gilvy said she spoke recently with Healey, who told her she was working on the issue. According to the DTA data, the agency has seen a 9% rise in daily calls since last year, with about 47% unable to connect, up from about 37%. The DTA and Healey's office did not respond to requests for comment. Now, unable to drive due to her fasting, Wills O'Gilvy, who suffers from lupus and hypoglycemia, said she has also met with state legislatures in her home. I can't let people down, said Wills O'Gilvy, adding that she intends to forego food indefinitely. All right, that article by Leah Douglas was titled Advocates Fast to Snap, to Protest Snap Cuts. Our next article is titled Steel Industry in Ukraine Faces New Obstacle, EU Rules. All right, and this is by Dan Pelishuk. Workers at Ukrainian steel giant Zaporizhzhia have kept the sprawling complex running in the face of years of Russian drones, missiles, and bombs. Now, the nearly century-old mill at the heart of Ukraine's southeastern steel industry faces a new threat to its survival: import quotas and carbon tariffs from the European Union. Steel products have long been a pillar of Ukraine's economy, accounting for 15% of its total exports. The EU is its top customer, receiving around four-fifths of that output. The bloc's suspension of import duties after Moscow's 2022 invasion was critical to keeping production steady at Zaporizhzhia, a top steelmaker, and other mills, said Oleksandr Myronenko, COO of parent company Meta Invest Group. "Now, we see the story changing fundamentally," he told Reuters. "Instead of support from the European Union, we face restrictions." Under new EU rules, which took effect on July 1st, the bloc cut its annual tariff-free import quotas by nearly half, while a wide array of imported steel faces an out-of-quota duty of 50%. Myronenko described the new measures as part of a raft of mounting challenges squeezing his industry, including the closure of Black Sea shipping routes and higher domestic rail costs. In the latest Russian attack on Zaporizhzhia, a strike on August 11th killed seven workers and forced the temporary closure of the plant. The new EU quotas for Ukraine represent a 60% reduction from 2025 trade volumes, according to Kiev-based consultancy GMK Center. All right, there are mounting challenges. The new measures are part of a pileup of challenges facing Ukraine's steel industry as Kiev and Moscow spiral toward a new escalation of the air war in the fifth year of fighting. Russian attacks on Ukraine's Black Sea corridor have cut off the primary route for its steel exports and imports of raw materials, driving up logistic costs for already financially strained firms. Frequent strikes on the plants themselves force costly cycles of production suspension and restarts. From August, producers must also contend with a 30% increase in domestic freight tariffs to help cover the state's railway budget, hit by its own higher electricity and maintenance costs. Alexander Kalinkov, president of the industry association Ukr Metallurg Prom, said the country's once formidable steel sector and government must urgently seek exemptions both at home and abroad. "For us to survive until the end of the year, a lot of different things need to happen," he said, referring to Ukraine's steel industry. Ukraine's Federation of Employers said the EU trade restrictions could cost the country $1.2 billion in foreign earnings and lead to a 0.6% drop in GDP. It called on Kiev to push Brussels for an exclusion and a joint steel import regime. All right, unused capacity. Inside Zaporizhzhia, a hulking crane loads smoldering multi-ton slabs of steel onto a conveyor where they are pounded into thin, over half-mile-long sheets and rolled into coils. Large parts of such assembly lines may soon need to be powered down as the plant refocuses on making more pig iron, a semi-finished product not covered by EU quotas, Myronenko said. But moving away from higher value-added steel products would mean around 50% of plant capacity would go unused, leading to a scramble to reassign workers, he added. The EU says quotas are needed to protect domestic producers, while the carbon tariffs, which took effect on January 1st and charge producers according to their emissions, are aimed at promoting cleaner production. With the Black Sea shipping route effectively closed, the plant faces extra costs of 30 to $40 per metric ton to import the coking coal needed for production through other European ports, Myronenko said. The result is less efficient. Ukrainian steelmakers being squeezed out of a competitive market by Turkish, Chinese, and European firms. Everyone understands the situation in Ukraine, he said, but everyone still has their own business, their own people, and they are responsible for them, so they behave quite aggressively on the market. All right, that article is titled Steel Industry in Ukraine Faces New Obstacle, EU Rules, and that was by Dan Pelaschuk. Next up, we go to some lighter fare with the best of Clay Thompson. His article today is titled Raccoons and Pigeons Lurk Around Urban Corners and Rooftops. And this is from August 29th, 2015. I am a 60-year resident of Phoenix and have never heard of raccoons in the city before. Yet I and others observed a pair on a neighbor's patio cover one recent night chowing down on something. Aren't they unusual in Phoenix? Not especially. My first thought was you didn't say what part of town you live in, but upon reflection, it doesn't really matter. Raccoons are urban pioneers like coyotes, opossums, and even foxes. They're all clever and highly adaptable animals that are reclaiming niches in an urban environment that replaced their traditional haunts. I have friends who live in Central Phoenix on Central Avenue, a very busy street. They've seen coyotes trotting through their yard. A few years ago, I got a question, complete with pictures, of a family of foxes living near 7th Street and Missouri Avenue. Get over it. Keep your cats inside where they belong, and don't leave your small dogs outside unattended. Lock up your chickens, should you happen to have any. Raccoons love chicken, something I learned in my earlier career in agribusiness. Don't leave pet food outside. Keep in mind that raccoons can carry rabies, but for the most part, sit back and enjoy the show and congratulate yourself on living somewhere so interesting. All right, here's our next question. Can you tell me why, out of all the birds I can think of, pigeons seem to be the only ones that have such a vast array of coloring, from black to white to brown, from spotted, striped, mottled, etc. What's up with pigeons? You really shouldn't talk to me about pigeons. I just found out I have some living in my attic crawl space, really, and it's going to cost me a ton to get them out and keep them out. I like birds, and I'm not going to poison them or something. But I believe there is a special roost in hell for pigeons. Anyway, here's the deal on pigeons. All the pigeons you see are descendants of the blue bar rock dove, which is native to Africa. Over the centuries, pigeons, like dogs and some other creatures, have been selectively bred by humans for colors, food, or skills such as homing or racing. And over the centuries, those birds have escaped and reproduced, and the result is a hodgepodge of colors, although they are all pigeons at heart and deserved to be damned for all eternity. All right, that is Clay Thompson's article titled Raccoons and Pigeons Lurk Around Urban Corners and Rooftops. All right, next up, we'll go to today's horoscopes. And as we always do, we start with Aries, and Aries goes from March 21st to April 19th. Emotional pressures may make it difficult to know how to assert yourself. Taurus, April 20th, May 20th. Where is that thought coming from? Charged feelings or survival fears may infiltrate your headspace. Gemini, May 21st, June 21st. Making big money moves, investing in your dreams can feel like the right move. Cancer, June 22nd, July 22nd. Your ambitions may feel a little hazy today. Have energy, but unsure where to put it. Reflect on your goals. Leo, July 23rd, August 22nd. Every little thing may inspire you, but is it worth chasing after? Dream without taking action. Virgo, August 23rd, September 22nd. Compelled to act on your future goals, move slowly with major commitments. All is not clear. Libra, September 23rd, October 23rd. Finding it hard to pin down the others? Progressing your objectives can feel like a slog when people aren't showing up. Scorpio, October 24th, November 21st. Big plans may encounter practical complications today. Can you be flexible instead of resorting to frustration or stubbornness? Sagittarius, November 22nd, December 21st. Are you wearing rose-colored glasses? Passion projects and romantic connections may not be all that they seem today. Capricorn, December 22nd, January 19th. Tensions mount between you and others today. Feeling confused about how a situation turns south? Share what's on your mind. Aquarius, January 20th, February 18th. Changing schedules or emotionally charged conversations could throw you off your game today. Pisces, February 19th, March 20th. You want what you want when you want it. But will it cost you? Practice discernment. All right, that's today's horoscopes. Next up, we will go to Dear Abby. Her article today is titled, No Kids Wedding Reception Plan Upsets Grandparents. Here's the question. Dear Abby, my youngest son is getting married this spring, and they have decided they want a child-free wedding reception. We have three grandchildren, ages 3 to 7. The wedding is where my son and his fiance live, so we are all traveling. They have asked all three kids to be in the wedding party as flower girls and the ring bearer, but afterward, there is a sit-down meal, reception, and dance to which the kids are not invited. The parents are expected to find or bring babysitters. Our grandchildren are extremely important to my husband and me, and we are devastated they have been excluded. We see them as part of the immediate family and have asked that they be included, but the bride and the groom have declined our requests. They have also banned babies of any age, nursing or not, yet their dog is part of the wedding party. I was at the bride's wedding shower this past weekend, along with my two other daughters-in-law, and I tried to feel enthusiastic about their upcoming wedding, but it is difficult. I have shed a few tears over this and have become resentful of both of them. Do you have any advice? This is from Wedding Woes in Canada. Dear Wedding Woes, I'm sorry the wedding reception isn't going to be the joyous family moment you were hoping for. If you or your husband were to renew your vows, I'm sure the festivities would be much different. However, this day is for the bride and groom. They are planning the celebration they want, and that includes a reception they've deemed inappropriate for kids. Show your love and respect for them by leaving your expectations and your grandchildren at the hotel. All right, here's the next question. Dear Abby, an acquaintance of mine has posted pictures of his newly built mansion, from breaking ground to digging the huge pool to the house itself. I admit I'm jealous, but isn't this rude of him? All our friends are middle to upper class. I find it terribly insensitive. Am I wrong? This is from Flipping Mad in Texas. Dear Flipping Mad, I'm sorry your ego is bruised from looking at the photos your friend posted of creating his new home, but what he did isn't rude. Perhaps if you start counting the blessings you have in your own life, you can combat the green-eyed monster you have been feeding. All right, Dear Abby, should I tell my two older grandchildren that my husband and I are divorcing? Although the divorce is in its early stages, our home is expected to be sold a year and a half from now. My daughter and grandchildren reside in that home. I'd like to know if this would be too early to let them know. Please give me your opinion. Making a change in Florida. Dear Making a Change, Your daughter should be told, if she doesn't already know, because she will need time to find another home for herself and her children. When to share the news of the divorce with her children should be her decision. All right, that is today's Dear Abby, and it was titled No Kids Wedding Reception Plan Upsets Grandparents. All right, next up we go to a couple of comics, and we go to today's Beetle Bailey, and we got Sarge there really angry and looks like upset with Beetle and saying, any last words? And Beetle screams out, Chaplain Stained Glass. And then the chaplain walks in and says to Sarge, I told you, Sarge, no rough housing. And then Sarge looks and says, okay. And then Beetle goes, now that's divine intervention. All right, Beetle Bailey by Greg Brian and Neil Walker. From Pickles by Brian Crane. We got Earl sitting in his recliner. Looks like he's reading the paper. His wife walks up to him and says, I sent Sylvia a text asking her if she'd like to go to lunch. I got a text back from her. All it said was, K. And she goes, what is that supposed to mean? And then Earl picks his paper back up and looks at it and says, maybe she wants to go somewhere that serves potassium. All right, that's today's Pickles by Brian Crane. Next up, we go to The Baby Blues by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott. And the parents are leaning up against the counter. It looks like they got their morning coffee in their hand. And Hammy is looking up to them and says, I've decided to be a good student this school year. And the father says, good for you, Hammy. And then his mom says, I'm proud of you. And then his dad sips his coffee and says, I give it a week. And then his mom turns to him and says, I give it until bedtime. And then Hammy opens the door and adds, oh, and add a taser to my school supply list. All right. That's The Baby Blues by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott. All right, that's going to bring us to the close of today's reading of the Arizona Republic for Monday, August 17th. I'm volunteer reader Philip Varela. Thanks for joining us, and remember to stay tuned for further great programming right here on Sun Sounds of Arizona.